Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Bald Move Television. We're the officially unofficial podcast for all of television, and like most times on Wednesday for the last 6 weeks, 7 weeks, we are coming back to talk about Hulu's Harlots. This is episode 307. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I am Cecily.
Cecily, what did you think of this episode of Harlots?
This was an episode of Harlots.
It was.
And there's something that I've been putting off telling you and everyone else for a while now. And I think it's time for me to come clean.
Okay.
Lest I go to debtor's prison. And that is, we killed another show, Aaron. We killed another show.
It feels like it. I mean,
it feels like, okay, so here are my honest opinions without that funny commentary. It seems like a lot of the things that they are paying off now could have been paid off last season had there not been things like Margaret Wells or Leslie Manville wanting to do another show or Jessica Brown Finley wanting to do another show. It seems like there are some things they quickly set up and resolved or didn't, or it just seems like they were kind of passing time to keep us invested for another season, maybe just on the hope that it would, that the cast would stay together and that we could get something bigger going later. But I'm feeling kind of disappointed.
No, I mean, I don't know about all their payoffs and plans and all that, but it just feels to me like there is just so much happening that everything, okay, Harlots always work because there's this delicate balance of power. And like, you know, the different Harlots factions would curry favor with this person or that person that had this ace up their sleeve, that ace up their sleeve. And it all felt very natural. And like you were just seeing this house of cards being constructed. Now it's like, I just laughed when Quigley says, you're at the pinnacle of your profession. Like, I watched this woman went from farmhouse to bedlam to the princes, the fourth in line of to the throne's main courtesan. How the hell does that happen?
So this woman wanted to screw a guy in a barn because she was really attracted to him.
Mm-hmm.
And she got locked up in a traumatic way. And suddenly she is just very eased into this profession and also handling men who don't respect her boundaries. But we, in the first season, we saw Lucy, who grew up in this life and knows mm-hmm. better than anyone how to handle men and things like that. And she had serious difficulties easing into that lifestyle. And they did a great job of telling that story. But for Kate to just be this gateway for Lydia to immediately come back to all of her power.
All of it. Like,
all of it.
And never a threat to give and taken back to Bedlam. Never any kind of like problem
no
with her showing up.
Out.
And also like Lord Blaine, how impotent is this guy? Like he shows up at his sister's house and just essentially, you know, alone and throws a fit and begs for his son back. Like, I thought, I mean, this guy's a Marquis. Why doesn't he show up with a whole bunch of officials, with a whole bunch of constables and all that? I guess I don't understand the balance of power. I really don't. And I don't understand, like, why Lucy Wells, a notorious harlot, why on her word you could end a guy like Blaine. I don't think they've done a very good job of, like they could have established the fact that Blaine is kind of in a precarious position amidst the aristocracy or something, but like he's both jockeying for this high position of governor and this favor with the king, but also I don't know, able to be brought low by a brand new justice Knox, and I don't know.
Like Lord Fallon killed himself in order to preserve the Spartan ministry or whatever it is, and still they had to disband anyway
mm-hmm.
because now he's got a craving for killing again.
Right. I need to kill again. Get me a kill.
Why did you ever stop? If the one person who threatens the sanctity of this order killed himself in front of you and you know that your secret's not getting out, then why did you ever stop?
Also,
was Lydia really the linchpin there?
Also, was this show always this reliant on people just happening to be in the right place in the right time to see? I understand that, like...
Oh my God, yes.
It's one thing when you had, like, Prince Rinseless, you know, like, kind of seeing something that gets passed through the grapevine, but it's another thing for, like, the main characters to just see other main characters...
It's
you
a small
know,
town. Everyone happens to be walking through the same streets when they think they're having private conversations, and they're right. always overheard by other main characters.
Right. That's the other problem, is I don't buy any of the romances that they're trying to establish, except with the possible exception of Nancy and Lady Fitz.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, that's a very matchy-matchy cute just because I know they're both lesbians.
Right, it's only because they set up this love story between Margaret and Nancy already. And you bought that, and now you know how much
and they have one
Lady
between...
Isabella felt for Charlotte and that yes. Margaret and Nancy had together. So you believe that those two find comfort in each other.
Yeah.
So this relationship, you don't buy it on the face of it. You buy it because of those first few seasons, like I'm saying, yeah. they set up so masterfully. And Nancy is just having some serious issues that I would love to see her work through in a healthy way, which you know you'll never get because of this time period. But that works for me. Mm-hmm. I like that. I love that they're finding comfort in each other. I don't entirely hate this, but it's like the more episodes that keep unfolding, the less on board I am.
Also, how can a person like Cherry sit on the fence permanently? And, like, betray Lady Quick, kind of, like, fuck Lady Quigley right in front of her. And then she's, like the next scene's asking, I need you to betray Lucy Wells. And then she does that, I guess. And then she immediately goes to tell Nancy that she's done, so Nancy can spring into action. I just don't understand what levers of power there are, how they're being pulled. I don't buy any of the relationships. I don't know. Like, I feel like this show, and maybe it's something that they're trying to struggle with themselves because they've had a lot of high profile, like, you know, people going off for The Walking Dead and other people leaving for other opportunities and they're scrambling. But holy shit, this just feels like Harlots is, like I said last week, it feels like it's wrapping up.
But I feel like they could have done this
unsatisfactorily, I might add.
I feel like they could have done this exact same story. Basically the exact same way with the same people dying and moving in and out of the picture if it felt like they were writing from the perspective of doing it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said with Cherry, for instance, she's got some motivation that was set up in the previous season with her loving Charles, I guess. It's not something that we necessarily empathize with, but it's something that she is consistently shown to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you thought that Charles felt the same way, then he went off to debtor's prison, so now we are to think that Cherry's a free agent who's a spy, but we want her to be on our hero's side, which is the Greek Street House, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But if Charles comes back, then whatever wind Charles blows in is what Cherry's wind is going to blow in the same direction. Mm. I guess.
Yeah, I don't know, because Charles has been MIA since, what, episode 2?
Right, but Lydia's saying, like, if something happens to me, Charles still stands to inherit this share of the Golden Square House, and it's being collected upon because Lucy and Elizabeth Harvey can't pay for it anymore, so does that mean that we're going to go back to the beginning of the season where Charles... Oh my God, are we going to have a Charles in charge situation? That's
no,
what's happening.
Charles
That's
is
what's
in charge
happen.
Of anything.
That's what they said in the text of the show.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much people owe money. I don't know how, like, is... They said it the same with Elizabeth Harvey, where she was going to get out why the getting's good, and, you know, William North just went up there and, like, just grabbed her and said, nope, and that felt weird, too. Like, he didn't... I honestly don't know what's going on in the show. I can't succinctly tell anyone's motivations and whether I'm supposed to feel sympathetic about it or not, because like I felt like they set up Elizabeth Harvey as a villain, you know, in the beginning, and I thought that we were seeing that final heel turn this episode, but now she's back to you know, trying to plead the case for Lucy. I don't know. I don't understand the justice system. Again, like if Lucy's word is going to be that powerful, even though half of the justices in the room, by the show's own admission, are for Blaine anyway. If that's going to be persuasive, like, wouldn't Lady Quigley throwing her in debtor's prison, wouldn't that be a very obvious, like, obstruction of justice kind of situation? But, like, I don't know, because I don't understand how the London justice system works anymore. I don't know who's being paid off. I don't know, you know, like, Kate, I don't understand how her plot armor works. Like, I don't understand how she can get away with slapping a prince and, you know, not have any consequences to it. I don't know.
Some answers to those things, but there are answers to the canon that I made up inside of my own mind, which aren't canon.
I like to hear them. Do they make sense?
I feel like the prince is a man child.
Sure.
And that he responds well to her slapping him and setting boundaries, and that's something that he absolutely respects, but they haven't shown that in the show. It's just something I'm inferring from seeing other stories like this and relationships like this that I've seen that have conveyed that.
Yeah,
that idea.
Again, Kate's supposed to be this farm girl who just was a lusty farm girl who loved her farm boy. And now she's got all this like sixth sense about how to handle these powerful men. And, you know, just like we were saying in the beginning, like, where did all this come from?
Right. When she was in the mental hospital, when she was in Bedlam, she was just this doe-eyed innocent girl who she wasn't some sort of, I don't know. I'm running through words in my mind that aren't offensive to anyone, but I'm just going to use like the terminology of the time. She's not some whore that just likes to have sex for money and doesn't feel anything. Like, she just had a relationship with a guy that she liked, that she knew growing up. And she's just this doe-eyed, innocent, very naive person. And then suddenly turns into this Venus because of Lydia Quigley's unstable tutelage.
There was
no repercussions for Lydia Quigley having gotten her brain spun out.
Right.
She just went right back to normal after she killed another person.
Yeah. What? And now, like, Kate's also got this, like, I don't need a rescuer. I am the rescuer. Like, I am the mouse that's going to go down into the devil's well to save poor Penny. You know,
Right, it's problematic, if not just bad storytelling.
Yeah, like, why does she want to be the princess courtesan, I guess?
I don't know what she wants, because she's never expressed any
she's
kind
in love
of motivation.
That's the other thing, the Stuart Knox situation.
Oh, Jesus.
That was literally introduced at the end of the episode before, and it was kind of like this flirtatious bar thing. Now they're having like soul sex, and he's like completely Twitter-pated, even though she's being sold off to the prince.
She sends him in the garden, so she goes out in her pajamas, even though it's full daylight,
right,
to go and find him, and nobody knows he's going to be there, and she can make it back to the porch in time to continue sex with the prince.
Yeah, that's the other.
That's nitpicking timelines a little bit, but still, it's valid.
Yeah,
it's valid.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got this giant manor in his castle, and that Stuart's just going to sneak onto his grounds and just kind of wait until he sees the...
With two horses and many bags.
Right, right.
I mean, and I just want to remind everyone that I love this show.
I love this show. What's happening now? Also, the idea that like this bailiff is going to ride up onto the prince's land and steal one of his guests, like... That they would just ride up into his backyard and steal one of his guests from his cricket match because she belongs in debtor's prison. That it just feels ridiculous.
It is absurd. Yep.
Yeah, and there's a whole bunch of other stuff going on in the episode.
Her being accosted, or not accosted, but arrested also was absurd. Her motivation for being there and what she hoped to gain out of it was even more baffling, right?
No, I mean, they're telling the story of her being kind of like her mom, impetuous and all about doing something now rather than, you know, kind of waiting and doing something more sober and reasoned. Like, that all kind of tracks. But yeah, her plan was to show... Again, I'm glad she actually lost, because number one, I don't understand cricket. It looks like Whack Bat from Fantastic Mr. Fox. But they told the story of her just getting her ass handed to her. And I for a moment, I thought, how are they going to pull out of their ass that she's just amazing at cricket? But she's not. And she bets. So it's like, But that kind of is almost worse in that she goes out there to wages 100 pounds, and she's just counting on that she's so captivating, so bewitching, she's going to steal the prince.
In pants? Gasp. I would like
she to... She does look good in pants, I gotta say. Second time in the season we've seen it, and it's a nice look.
I would like to see... I would have liked to have seen half of Margaret Wells mm-hmm. and the other half of... Charlotte Wells and William North in her. That dichotomy of like Margaret Wells's impetuousness and but also cunning, planning, clever fox ways, but mm-hmm. also like the William North, Charlotte Wells half of her that's actually does have the good ideas and has that trap ready to be sprung type of thought to her, and she's all Margaret Wells' worst impulses in this scene.
I have no read.
Oh, she's young. That's fine.
I have no read on Hal Pincher either. Whether, like, I mean, I know he's not a good guy, but is he sincere at all in trying to help?
I have thoughts.
The situation with Jack.
It seems like he killed Charlotte Wells without a doubt on accident. 100%.
Right.
He threw a hand back because he was pissed at his brother and meant mm-hmm. to throw a fist at him.
Mm-hmm.
He threw Charlotte Wells over the staircase on accident.
Right.
And he tells the story.
She weighs 5 pounds and just like that, went dresses, flying 10 feet. And then
the dresses, the wigs. I mean, once you get top heavy.
Yeah.
10 feet away from the staircase.
All fucked, yeah.
But this episode, he says that he just saw red as if he did it on purpose in some way. And I think that's the wrong way to take this character.
Yeah.
As if he's a person who'll punch through a door inches away from your head. Like, he's that volatile when we haven't gotten any inclination of that this far.
Well, we started to because he started getting real handsy and grand. And now everybody's saying, like, you got to watch out for this guy. He's crazy. And, you know, you've got Emily being all like, oh, no, not Hal. He'll never hurt. And I don't know. He talks like all of a sudden he talks like an abuser.
I think he was a manipulative person.
The level-headed guy of the group.
Absolutely.
But, and I guess Isaac's, you know, he got killed. So
I mean, and here's what I mean when I say that if they had written this season, the exact same season, a little bit better, mm-hmm. then at this point in time, the trauma of his brother's death affecting him would have caused this kind of reaction mm-hmm. where he is more angry and more quick to blaming the wrong people and making some irrational decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I would believe that,
mm-hmm.
but that's not what they're doing.
Yeah, and that's the problem is that when, you know, they've been successful. They, like, every year kind of had its own featured villain, and, you know, they had a new magistrate or a new justice, and but you keep on, it'd be like, I can't even go to Game of Thrones anymore because it shit to bed at the end, but it's like, if every season of Game of Thrones you kept like the Starks, but there was a different ruling family on the Iron Throne and you had to get used to all this other, like, I don't know who the powers are. I don't know what their relative like rank is. I don't have a good read on Hal's character. It seems like it changes from episode to episode. I'm very tired of this fucking blackmail plot. Like, this has been going on for episodes and they spent an inordinate amount of time dealing with this fucking episode. And it doesn't even matter because the truth came out, or at least her version of the truth. And now she's clinging to the small lie. It was Margaret Wells that pulled the trigger, and she's trying to do the whole, you know, William North, let it die. Don't go chasing after ghosts. But I don't know why I should care about Pincher. I don't know why I should care about Emily Wells. I don't.
Well,
like,
here's
people I do care about, like Fanny, is getting like her only purpose this episode is to service the plot with this blackmailing harlot. And damn, there's more for her to do. I think
we need her.
Yeah.
So here's another thing that we haven't talked about in a while is Harriet, who I've never really liked because I guess I've never really understood her motivations, and William North and his mm-hmm. quest to help her, which I do understand because he's a good man.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's trying to find one of his guys too.
So Lord Leadsome kidnapped Jack Lively,
mm-hmm.
who they've all got a connection to at this point. He is Harriet's bully man, if not her secret wannabe lover.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this is the same kind of people snatchers that they alluded to early on in the season with Nell? Or do you think this is just like a revenge plot because they want to get Jack out of or Ledsam wants to get Jack out of Harriet's hair.
I don't know. It seems to me like I thought the Snatcher was someone who's preying on the harlots of London, and they're going to some kind of Jack the Ripper thing. Now it seems like they have changed that perception to make it seem like there are black folk in London just getting snatched off the streets and shipped over to the sugar plantations and whatnot in the Americas. And, you know, that's horrific. And I actually am somewhat invested in this story because I like William North. I like, you know, and because I like him, I like his guys. I thought it was interesting. They had this kind of romance between, you know, Jack and Harriet, but it's, And I like their, you know, giving up speeches and kind of like rousing all the other people of color in London and the people are sympathetic to that as well, to kind of like, you know, keep to try to put a stop to this and save one man. We could save multiple. All that stuff is good. But they also put a little bit of like, is Harriet trying, like, are they going to pair Harriet and William North together now that Margaret Wells is, you know, declared for America? Because I felt like they resurrected that romance just a little bit in some of their scenes.
That's what I'm saying. It's
a little bit, like, of intimacy there.
Like, this was buying time from this thing that they set up before and shut down with. I mean, before, when they were having this romance, this perceived romance by Margaret Wells, I didn't think there was anything there and happening. I think it was just her needing help and him trying to help her. And now there's a thing happening. There's a quote unquote thing. I don't think there's a romance really happening. I just think that now at this point, the pairing off seems very natural in a way that they can help each other at this point, that they could have always helped each other. I'm not sure why they needed the girl versus girl kind of rivalry between Margaret and Harriet, unless it was going to result in something.
Well, I think that this season has been them calling audible after audible, trying to deal with all the scheduling conflicts and the schedule around their cast and plot around their cast. And this, you know, it's like, this used to happen a lot more. It's kind of been rare that, like, people bail on projects and whatnot, but, like, it seemed to happen a lot to this show, and, yeah, it doesn't make sense.
So, the last thing I want to say about Harriet is that Harriet decides to trust Hal, and he betrays her immediately.
But does he, or is he, because, like, I'm kind of persuaded that maybe, because now we found out that his mother got sold by his father or her man or something to a sugar plantation, and he's got personal stake in, like, seeing this type of thing put down. So, like, I'm halfway persuaded, as Emily Lacey is, that he's actually, you know, working to take down this whole plot, but also he's very much in it for himself and his own fortune.
Right. So I am Harriet, and I'm listening to your pitch, and I'm not buying it.
Right. Right. But she's desperate to get Jack back. But also, William North is on the case. Let him do his work. Can I tell you one thing I liked about this episode?
Yes.
I like Nancy in her Bloodborne Hunter's costume, accosting Lord Blaine with her Hunter's Workshop trick weapon and calling him Beast.
Yeah, I agree. She's got a lot of blood echoes in her.
He's literally a blood-starved beast. He needs to kill again.
He is.
And it's not too much longer till he's going to start sprouting fur and horns and transforming.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the season 4 of the Harlots that I'm hoping that they round into shape.
Me too.
So we have exactly, and here's the thing. One of the reasons that my frustration is starting to boil over is we are approaching the final episode, I believe, it's next week. I don't see how any of this stuff is going to resolve in any kind of satisfactory manner. Like, it's going to feel like this, they have torn the heart out of this show and flipped over the card table, and we're going to essentially have some kind of half-ass cliffhanger, and we'll have to see next season, unless they just are going to wrap this thing up and then you're done. I don't know. What's your take on this, or your gut feeling?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If the writers had known in the early stages of the previous season what was going to happen in the early stages of this season, we would have gotten a different show.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of these things the same things could have happened in a more concise manner, in a more satisfying way. I'm not sure if they can wrap this up and just say, like, wow, that was a very long intermission, I guess, on real action and development. And then next season they pick up with something bigger and stronger, which I can't even imagine without Jessica Brown Findlay and Leslie Manville, mm-hmm. honestly. And Lucy, for that matter. Are you going to kill Lucy?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, what the hell are we even here for anymore?
Yeah.
It's not Fanny. And I like Fanny, but it's not Fanny.
Yeah.
It's not Lydia Quigley. What are we thinking here of, for?
Like, how can they build a show around, like, Lucy and Nancy and Lady Fitz?
That's exactly it. It's like, anytime you write something at all, you have to ask yourself, who's the audience that you're writing for, and who's the audience now? Because it's not the people that you started writing for in the beginning.
I just think that, like, that's another sign of the show not being prepared to do this, because I don't think Lucy had developed enough as a character to believably take on all these roles and stresses that she's supposed to be. Like, she needed another season to kind of round into some kind of Charlotte shape of having enough experience and having a, you know, but, like, she's just such a fucking easy mark. It's not really fun to watch her kind of flail around and getting taken advantage of and get arrested, and then she runs away and she gets
And nobody's rooting for Lydia Quigley. So her coming back into power and, like, conquering Lord the Marquess of Blaine is not something we're rooting for either.
Yeah. Well, that's a bummer. We got one more episode to go. We'll see what, if anything, they can do to rekindle our love for harlots. Because I will be taking my shillings elsewhere.
Listen, I am so sorry to everyone.
We should just stop covering.
We killed this show.
We should, like, I mean, we're going to try again.
We're not covering any television together ever again.
We're going to try again. No, you're wrong. We're going to try again in September to kill American Horror Story. But I think we need a permit before we cover television.
This is a cosmic joke.
We've got these microphones need to be registered as dangerous weapons because they've killed so many, struck down so many shows in their prime. If you have feedback for us, please send it to tv@baldmove.com. You can also discuss Harlots on our forums, forums.baldmove.com, with your fellow fans. We'll be back next week for the finale. Also, we've got another episode of Bald Move TV coming up Friday where we talk about general TV stuff. And we've actually seen a lot of stuff. We went on vacation last week. Got a lot to talk about regarding, what have we seen? The Boys? I've got through season one of Dark. I'm going to be talking about a little bit of that. And also HBO premiered a new show, The Righteous Gemstones, that Jim and I and Cecily will be talking about here on Friday. And we also got some more industry talk on Bald Move TV. Stay tuned for that. We'll be back next week to put Harlots to bed. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
Good night.